Their chisel clove and graver oak, their forge was glade and wound was hilt, the silver mine, the mason built, their battle.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dave Kale, the co-host of the Riddles in the Dark podcast with the Tolkien Professor. I hope you've all been listening to that. From the comments that we're getting on the Mythgard site of people demanding more episodes, sounds like a lot of you are. And on the latest episode that we recorded, which was yesterday, Friday, July 6th, we had about 15 people listening live, which was fantastic. So it sounds like you guys are enjoying the episodes, which is great. And of course, a lot of you have been sort of saying like, when are we going to get more episodes and stuff? If you recall, one of the solutions proposed for this was to do additional Riddles in the Dark Digest episodes that I would be hosting myself, and that these would feature contributed content from our analysts and also address a lot of the feedback that you guys give us that we don't have time to address on the main Riddles in the Dark episodes. And of course, the reason for this is that Corey is just so busy with all of his Mythgard and Signum stuff that he doing an episode every week is a real strain on him, and it takes away from his family time. So what we agreed to was this alternating every other week we would do an episode, and then I would try to do digest episodes in between those. And of course, I failed miserably. But I hadn't completely forgotten about it. I've been accumulating all the content. We have a ton of predictions from our analysts and a lot of feedback from you guys. Doing it on my own was hard. I'm sure some of you have listened to that first episode, and I just wasn't terribly pleased with it. And also just a lot of work. And it just missed sort of the dynamic element you get with a conversation. And that's when, of course, you catastrophe struck. My new co-host, Trish Lambert, fell into our laps and said, "Hey, I want to help. How can I help?" She was one of the many listeners who was demanding new episodes. And as many of us who've gotten involved with helping Corey produce content for his site and podcast, she's one of those people that crossed the line from demanding new content to saying, "Fine, I'll help you make it." So here we are back doing a new digest episode, and we're going to record a whole bunch in a row and start releasing them, and our hope is to catch up and start doing these alternating with the new Riddles in the Dark episodes. And I'm really excited about it because Trish is a fantastic lady, very, very smart, very energetic, and a lot of fun to talk to. I know Corey's going to be releasing some episodes with her doing sort of Tolkien chats and stuff. And she's going to be joining me on these digest episodes, which I think are going to be awesome. So let me stop rambling and introduce you to my new, brand new co-host and the new member of the Mythgard podcasting team, Trish Lambert. Hello, Trish.
Hi, Dave. People are going to probably get used to me laughing. I laugh a lot. But I got to tell you, you have just given me a new title to put on my business card. I don't know if I can call myself a eucatastrophe or a eucatastrophe creator. But either way, I love that.
Yeah, I think I would just go with eucatastrophe. Or actually, no, I got it. Eucatastropher.
There you go. I love it. I love it. I mean, for a Tolkien geek to be called a eucatastrophe is like the epitome of compliment, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's a word that I don't know about you, but that's a word that I really – I guess I must have heard it at some point since I studied some classic Greek when I was in college. But it's a word I really wasn't introduced to – what didn't really insinuate itself into my vocabulary until I started listening to Corey's podcast. Now that I know it, I use it as frequently as possible.
All the time, yeah. Well, you know, actually, I got the impression from reading Tolkien's letters that he kind of like – kind of created the word, either that or he resurrected it. I don't know, because I remember one of the letters to his son, he talks about eucatastrophe versus dyscatastrophe, D-Y-S catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And then kind of, you know, talked a little bit about it. I almost got the impression that maybe he might have even coined it. I don't know.
No, I think it comes from the Greek.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure
it was actually in use. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
I think it's a Greek word, but it's just something that it's not a part of modern parlance, really. So anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Trish? In particular, you know, I think what the listeners really want to know is how did you get into just basics about you. What do you do? What do you enjoy? Where do you come from? How did you get into Tolkien? how did you get into listening to Tolkien, Professor, and then end up involved here?
And end up here, yeah. Well, I mean, now I will try to keep it short. That could probably be a whole, you know, thing. But I just kind of real easy background to give you is I'm an Army brat. So I was raised in an Army household. And so because of that, I mean, I've traveled extensively. I, you know, just someday, you know, or you'll it'll probably leak out in my conversation about, you know, when I was living here and when I was living there. And I mean, it's just kind of like, and I continued that into my adulthood. So I've just traveled all my life all over the place. Today I live in Austin, in the Austin, Texas area. Having moved all over the place, I have found that I really enjoy the vibe here. And, I have a marketing consulting company as well as a business coaching practice. So I am a solo, my business coaching practice is called Success in Sweatpants, which should pretty much say it all. It's like I help folks be able to stay at home and, you know, have their businesses and be successful. But the really important stuff is how did I come to Tolkien? I am of the generation when Tolkien was still alive when I read Lord of the Rings. I first got introduced to it. I think my sister left a copy of The Hobbit laying around one summer, and I read The Hobbit, and then I read The Lord of the Rings, and I was in junior high school and just loved it. I mean, I was just entranced, enchanted. And I saved up my babysitting money and got a hard copy version of the trilogy. Oh, and I read the Ace paperbacks, the infamous Ace paperbacks were the ones that I read. And then I bought a copy of the trilogy, and I bought also a wall map of Middle Earth, which actually was on my wall all through my high school days and actually into college, took it to, you know, my dorm with me. But I think the funniest story, probably, I think anyway, of my Tolkien year. Oh, I wrote a letter. I actually wrote a fan letter to him, which was in which I got a response from Alan and Unwin, which I wish I'd kept that letter, you know, but who knew?
Yeah, I noticed your letter did not appear in the letters letters of J.R.R. Tolkien.
It did not. No, I was, and I certainly, being however how old was I at the time, 12 or 13, no, didn't ask any particular scholarly questions, I don't think. But I did. I've always been a writer. Actually, I do a lot of writing. And if you ask me what I had, you know, I can only pick one thing to be. That would be what I am, as a writer. And even back in those days, so I wrote, you know, my only way to really still stay in Middle Earth after I finished the trilogy at the time was to write myself into it. So I wrote a piece of fan fiction called, God, it's embarrassing, called Lady Patricia of Middle Earth. And I had kind of like a line which in the wardrobe kind of, you know, transitioned from, you know, today's world into Middle Earth, you know, kind of that kind of written. But this is the funniest part is I had to have a boyfriend. I mean, I'm a teen, you know, I'm a tween at this point. I had to have a boyfriend. So the only unattached male I could find in the story that I could have as a boyfriend was, drum roll please, Glorfindel.
Oh my God.
So when I, and I, years and years and years later, when I'm listening to the Silmarillion, you know, podcast, and Glorfindel came up in the Silmarillion, it was like hearing about an old boyfriend.
Oh, so that's what he's been up to. He never told me.
I had no idea of the significance of this guy that I had chosen to be my boyfriend, you know, but anyway, so that, but I have just always been a Tolkien fan. And, to tell you the honest truth, you know, when I the movies came out, I'm sure like most of us, I was, you know, worried. And actually, you know, I, like Corey was mentioning yesterday on the podcast on how his wife wouldn't go with him to see them. I mean, I ended up having to go see the second and third movies by myself because nobody would go with me. I'd sit in the theater and go, oh, that's not right.
Yeah. Teresa's family, well, they do it like she, and it's not just Lord of the Rings either. Like last night we were just hanging out. And Harry Potter Deathly Hallows Part 1 was on, and then she just sort of flipped it on before we went to go do something, and they had the part where they show up at Harry's house and Bill Weasley comes in and introduces himself, and I just go, you know, like, yeah, we haven't met, you know, during the last 5 years where you've been visiting our house and we came to visit you in school and all this stuff, and she's just like, oh, stop it. Like, it's just all book adaptations now. She just drives her bonkers. But her family will last time we watched this at their house, I don't remember why, but we did a marathon of Lord of the Rings films, and I think it was partly just to antagonize me. Like they her mom and her brother get set, like, it drives Teresa bonkers, but they get satisfaction out of bugging me about it. So how would they screw up there, Dave? So I'm trying not to be like that. I've assured Teresa with The Hobbit, I'm not going to be that way.
I don't know. I don't know. I think, you know, listening to some of these and watching some of the footage and stuff, I think I'm going to have to also go by myself. Either that, or I said to Corey yesterday, why don't we get some kind of like group together? You know, I would travel to be with other Tolkien geeks to go see The Hobbit, because at least we can all like gasp as one.
Yes.
You know?
I wish I had the money and the time to go to on one of the New Zealand trips this fall. I think I'll probably try to do it next year.
That would be great.
This fall I'm going to be, in addition to the fact I just emptied all my savings on an engagement ring and wedding stuff, and also I'll be starting first year of my PhD. I'm like, I cannot take 2 weeks to go to New Zealand.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Of 2013 though, I'm going. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity to go with a bunch of people, something like that. I really want to go because that would be awesome. Yeah. But maybe we can do something smaller scale, like some kind of get together, like fly out to where Corey is or something.
I would love to do that. I was thinking, you know, maybe Corey would do something where we fly to where Corey is, and then the next day we all get together, you know, and he sort of facilitates a session with us, you know, with a group of us that have seen the movie. I mean, I think I would totally go to that. I think that would be awesome to do.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, so you may have something in mind. I don't know, you know, because I think one of the classes, because I'm doing class with him, and I think I may have said something like, you know, we should get together, and he goes, we, you know, just stand by. So he may have something on his mind. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, and how I got to find Corey and you and Mythgard and everything else was literally. I was thinking about this the other day. How did I do it? I just was kind of feeling like there must be other people out there who love this as much as I do. And I just started browsing, and I literally tripped over Corey's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably, I don't even know, it hasn't really been all that long. I mean, I haven't been with him, you know, since he started doing it. I mean, I think he was in the middle of his Tolkien lecture at the time, or maybe it was just before he started the Silmarillion lecture. I can't remember. But anyway, so I discovered it like many people do. You know, I notice there are folks that come on and say, oh, I just discovered it. I listened to everything. And I was one of those people. And I just got so excited. And then when Mythgard, you know, when he opened Mythgard, I just am so excited about Mythgard because it's so not, I don't want to say non-academic, but you know how Corey says it's like the reason he started to do the podcast was because, you know, he would do a paper and only like two people in the whole world would read the paper, and mm-hmm. he knew that there were more people out there interested in this stuff. And it's kind of like he's translated that into Mythgard, and it's very scholarly and it's very academic and it's very, you know, challenging for me, especially given how long it's been since I've been out of school, and also because I'm science trained and not literature trained, mm-hmm. but I really enjoy that. And so kind of, you know, I've just sort of, that's how, you know, I've kind of gone from one to the other. And I mean, being able to actually get a master's in literature with Tolkien studies, oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty
exciting.
I mean,
it's like, I just can't believe it. So anyway, so that's, you know, that's how I ended up here. And I just could talk about this stuff all day long. I love listening to him. I love listening to you guys on the Digest. And I think one of the reasons why I offered to help you with this is because I think Corey ignores my input sometimes on the radio shows only because there's so many people talking and I'm so like, there's so many things I want to say that it's like, I'm sure he's like, okay, I already said like two things from her. It's like, I'm not going to say these next.
Yeah. I actually, I had a similar experience. We were talking about this off the air before we started recording. How I got involved is my story is very similar. I actually came to this, believe it or not, I came to this from Harry Potter podcast.
Oh.
I started out listening to MuggleCast and PotterCast, which I've since stopped listening to because, you know, I mean, let's face it, they've just run out of material. It's just not like and I love them. Nothing against them. I love them to death. And if they're listening to this, please don't be offended. But honestly, it's fairly clear that a lot of the hosts are moving on to other projects, and they're just sort of inertia is keeping them doing this, but their interests really lie elsewhere. Like the MuggleCast guys have gone off and started a Game of Thrones podcast, and some of them have started this new news entertainment news site Hypeable, and the PotterCast mm-hmm. people have moved on to other things. But anyway, I started listening to those, and like many people, I sort of exhausted the archive of stuff and was like, well, I want more podcasts to listen to. It's like a drug. So I started listening to Father Roderick and the Secrets of the Harry Potter podcast, which also I've since stopped listening to. I've basically stopped listening to Harry Potter podcasts at this point, which is sad. But there was his Secrets of the Middle Earth podcast, which I listened to about 5 episodes of, and then there weren't any more, and there was a lot of discussion about starting up a new one. And at some point I was just like, well, maybe I'll just look for other Tolkien podcasts on iTunes. And I found a variety of sort of lectures and recorded things. Right. And then I found Tolkien Professor, and then I was just sold. And then he was doing all kinds of different – and one of the things I loved about him was that he did – in some sense, what I liked about him was the not particularly organized, structured, produced, format. That he was basically, anytime he had a conversation about stuff that he thought could be interesting, he recorded it and put it on there. And he has no shame, like if the audio quality is terrible, he doesn't care. And I kind of like that. I mean, it's a fun mix of shamelessness and narcissism, but it's great content. And like you, there was a point at which like I did a couple call-ins with him, on Skype Q&As and stuff, and had some great conversations, and just was like, well, that's just not enough. Like I don't just want to be a passive digester. I want to actively contribute. So he launched his Silmarillion seminar, and I was like, oh, I must get into this. So I like signed up immediately and said I'll put in however much time I need to, and I volunteered to help edit the episodes when it was clear there was a need for that. And it was all just a ploy to insinuate myself into his inner circle. So
Well, and actually that's how I got to know you, was on the Silmarillion podcast, and I just enjoyed it because, I mean, I got to say, at least 9 times out of 10, I mean, you were always sort of – it's so often, like, you would bring up, like, the alternate view of something, or you'd have an opinion that maybe was kind of
very
against everybody else. And I'm like, yeah, Dave! All right, Dave! So it's like I knew you already from the Silmarillion podcast. I'm like, oh, I totally work with this guy. I mean, let's do something. So, yeah, so isn't that funny? That's – well, yeah, and I bet you and I have probably echoed – the experience of a lot of folks who are listening, they've come, they found Corey, and now it's like like you said, it's like kind of addictive, It's like more episodes, episodes.
And I would like to just put this out there that for anyone out there who might be listening, who's thinking about who's finding the rate at which we produce shows and respond to Facebook comments to be somewhat dissatisfying, or who just feel like who feel like listening and posting comments on Facebook or the Mythgard page is just not quite doing it for you, and you're starting to think maybe you want to take a next step or take things to the next level or whatever, please send me an email, kale@mythgard.org, because we can find things for you to contribute to. We would love to build out a team. I that has been Corey's vision all along with transitioning Tolkien Professor to get it to the point where it's not just a monologue by him.
And well, and that's actually why I'm sitting here now, is because I got to the point where I started to feel guilty about complaining, because I thought, Trish, if you're going to complain and not offer, that's crazy. So it's like I finally was like, okay, if I'm going to be that demanding, then I need to step up.
Dangerous.
It is. Yes.
Very dangerous, but you don't know what you're going to get sucked into, but but I think there's other people out there like that, and the more of us who are doing this, the obviously it's going to create some complexity for management for folks like me and you, but I think we will be able to put out more stuff and really do some awesome work, and it would really help Mythgard out too, because I agree with you. Mythgard is fantastic. Like the fact that you can get a master's in literature with the focus in Tolkien studies is great. But I tell you, I'm sold on the larger vision. Corey has convinced me, just from my own experiences too, that like people mortgaging their future to get a bachelor's degree in liberal arts and then struggling to find jobs because the workplace doesn't necessarily see the value in that. Like that is just ridiculous. Like higher education's got to change, although I think I still put myself, and Corey feels this way too, that there's still value in the residential education. Like there's something about going away from your home and living on a camp in a dorm with other students and all that. But is it worth $50,000 a year? Well, you know, maybe if you go to Harvard or Stanford where they have a huge endowment and you and then most of it's paid for you, so you, that's not the actual cost to you. Okay, fine. And you know, that opens a lot of doors. But a lot of other places where you have to do it all through loans, it ain't worth it.
And we got to and
using some of this online stuff, we can put some external pressure on the higher education industry to change. So I'm sold on the larger vision.
Oh,
so
I
want to.
I am absolutely too, and that's one of the things too that I do want to stress about Mythgard. You know, I do find I am having a blast doing the classes, but it is also a challenge, and it's an academic challenge. I mean, the academic standards are high, you know, and so, and that's when I tell people I'm doing this and they ask me a bit more about Mythgard. I may imagine that I'm seeing some skepticism in their eyes or not, but I always make a point of saying, no, you don't understand. I mean, this is truly, it's a very high standard
and it's,
academic
and
environment.
And it's not what people think of with online education.
No,
it's not,
no.
You're not just sitting and watching videos or reading notes on a web page. It's like very interactive. Like he really has done, and this is something, you know, there's a lot of online education stuff that's really high profile in the news, Coursera and Udacity and some of those.
Yeah.
And none of them is doing liberal arts, not the way that Corey is. And people, I think even people like them, where they're really thinking outside the box, they don't believe that this kind of sort of humanities interactive experience is scalable.
Can be done.
But it really is.
It totally is.
And this is it also offers a great opportunity for people holding these degrees to be employed.
And that's – well, I mean, I was pretty honest with Corey about that. You know, I told him one time, I said, you're not getting rid of me. I mean, you know, what my plan is to do is when I get my master's, you know, I'm going to go be a preceptor because –
That's right.
You know, and Corey said, well, fine, because as this grows, it is definitely scalable as far as the lectures. But then, you know, the second part is to have these smaller group discussions where you're actually live. And I'm like, you know, that's kind of what I do for a living as a coach. So it would be transferring that over and it'd be great.
And the thing I realized about too is – That's really where the teaching is taking place, right? Like those are the people who are doing teaching. Yeah, you get great lecturers, but lecture is not where you do learning. Learning is in discussion. So
now we've done this huge commercial for Mythgard.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. We do a lot of that on these things. So okay. Well, more about that later. Let's get into Riddles in the Dark.
Hobbit.
That's right. So the previous episode of the Digest did episodes 1 and 2. So we're going to launch into episode 3. And depending on how quickly.
Do you want me to give my predictions on the first two episodes?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Okay. So, let's do episodes 1 and 2 very briefly so you can be on the record. Episode 1, if people recall, the very first episode, if you recall, we had about the first four episodes were myopically focused on the dwarves because Corey and I are fascinated by the dwarf backstory. And in fact, to the point that there was somebody at one point who commented on episode 5 or 6, it's like, hey, are you ever going to talk about the Hobbit? this character named the Hobbit in the Hobbit? Like, yeah, the dwarf stuff's great. So anyway, so we spent the first 4 episodes on dwarves. And the very first one was about Thrain. And we really spent a lot of time. And of course, there's still an unresolved discussion about how to actually pronounce this. I think what we came down is Thrain. I think the sort of emphasis on the second syllable, it's 2 syllables, and the emphasis on the second syllable is undisputed. It's more, is it Thrain or Thrain? I don't know. So I'm going to go with Thrain this time. I'll change it next time. So episode 1 was on Thrain, and we really delved into the appendix material about Thrain. Thrain is, of course, the grandfather of Thorin Oakenshield. And the question here was, how will Thrain's backstory be explored? Actually, I'm wrong. Thrain is his father.
I was going to say his father, yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
I was trying to think
about
that.
Right. Our answers were A through E, full flashback showing his journey and capture at the edge of Mirkwood. If folks recall, Thrain, they were living in exile after being kicked out of the Lonely Mountain by Smaug. And at some point, Thrain said, I'm dissatisfied. I'm going to go back to the Lonely Mountain, see how that goes. And people were like, well, that's a terrible idea, but he did it anyway. But he never even made it that far. They journeyed east, got to Mirkwood, camped overnight, and his companions woke up, and he was gone. Never saw him again. So A is we'll see all of that on screen. B was maybe just – B and C were just exposition, B being Gandalf will relate the story to Thorin, perhaps during when they have their first night at Bilbo's house. Since Gandalf knows a lot of the story from Thrain's lips, having met him in the dungeons of Dol Guldur, perhaps the exposition will be Thorin telling the story. He's already learned it from Gandalf. D was none of the above. It will be left out or mentioned in passing. And then E was, we added another, you can tell that this was our first question, we didn't know what we were doing. We ended up with another answer that was added by Father Roderick, who found our answers dissatisfying. He said he thought it would be exposition from Thrain to Gandalf. So in other words, that the story will be related on screen when Gandalf's at Dol Guldur interacting with Thrain. And then it won't be retold to the other characters. So there you go. Full flashback, exposition from Gandalf to Thorin, from Thorin to others, from Thrain to Gandalf, or none of the above.
And I'm going with Father Roderick's edition of
Thank you, Father Roderick.
Thank you, Father Roderick. Yes.
You weren't the only one either. Lily and Elorio from the Warriors of the Westfold did the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and actually, you know, when I listened to him talk about it too, I said, yeah, that makes sense. Because we know they're going to meet. We know that we'll see the two meet. I mean, now we know that. Maybe we didn't at the time that this episode came out. Mm-hmm. And I could see Thrain gasping out the story with his dying breath to Gandalf. It was being very dramatic. So E's my choice.
Yep. Great. Good. So... Episode 2, we got into Thror, who is actually Thorin's grandfather.
Yes.
And if folks recall, Thror was also at Lonely Mountain when they got kicked out by Smaug. But when he got dissatisfied, what he did was he decided to go recapture Moria, or Khazad-dûm, as the dwarves refer to it. And of course, that didn't go particularly well for him either. He literally lost his head over it. So, and we talked a lot about that, and what we got into was, we started getting into the Battle of Azor Ulbazar, but we didn't actually make a prediction on that. We left that for the next episode, which we'll be discussing shortly. What we wanted to know was, will Thror's death be portrayed? And the reason we were getting into a lot of this is we really think that, seems to be a lot of emphasis on the dwarves here and really filling out their characters and backstory.
Right.
In a way that you don't see in the actual published Hobbit. And Peter Jackson has made it clear on multiple occasions that he wants to mine the, for lack of a better term, apocryphal material. And so so we strongly suspect that this is where some of the richest content to be mined will come from. And, of course, the casting has hinted that these things will be shown on screen. Azog.
Yeah, I was going to say, did Azog is cast and Thror was cast
yep.
also.
Yep, Thror's been cast, Thrain's been cast, Azog's been cast. So, and this, of course, gives you – we think they'll really play up the enmity between the dwarves and the goblins instead of just taking it for granted. And so they'll show us – why there's this enmity. And these events, of course, are what underlie that. So the question here was, how will Thror's death be portrayed on screen? And your choices A through D are, the full gruesome scene will unfold on screen, including Gnar picking up Thror's disembodied head. B is, the story will be told by a character, probably Thorin, maybe to Bilbo. C is, it will be mentioned in brief, probably in reference to the wars between goblins and dwarves. So they'll just, you know, like Bilbo will be like, hey, how come there's so much enmity? Well, they killed Thror, and that's all we'll get. D is, it will be left out, and the origins of the war and the dwarves will be changed or maybe just omitted. We'll just take it for granted. So what do you think?
Well, I'm finding I'm agreeing with you. You picked C, right? You said it'll be mentioned in brief. I agree with that. Now, again, you know, that's kind of counter to us knowing Thror's been cast, but I just said it's going to take up precious screen time if they try to do anything else.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be C.
Well, about his casting, the caveat, the nuance that I want to remind listeners about here is, the question is not whether whether any of this stuff was filmed. It's, will it make it through the editing process onto the theatrical release?
And that's a good point.
I think it's highly likely some of these scenes will be filmed. I just think that it's highly likely they'll get chopped. Because you know, that was the thing, like, in starting out thinking about how's The Hobbit going to be made in the movie, there was a lot of thought about, boy, they really don't have much. How are they going to do this on screen? Or sort of more like, well, this will fit into a film way better than Lord of the Rings did.
Right.
And after you know, 6 months of doing this with Corey, it's like, well, there's way too much material. They're going to have to cut so much. So I think this is one possibility here where Thror's been cast, they'll film some scenes with him, and then very little of that will actually make it on screen.
And it'll end up on extended edition in the DVDs.
Or yeah, and it sounds like yeah. it sounds like you feel the
you.
Same way.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. Just to give listeners a notion of how we expect things to work. So Trish and I are going to labor furiously over the next few weeks to record as many digest episodes as quickly as we can to catch up to approximately where the main Riddles in the Dark episodes are. I think the current plan is to basically release one episode, you know, and we'll release those as we have them. We'll trickle them out, but very quickly. Once we've caught up, the plan I think will be to release these sort of alternating weeks with the main episode. So, 1 week will be a Riddles in the Dark episode with Corey. The next week will be a Riddles in the Dark digest episode with Trish
But probably from one back, right?
Yeah.
In other words, we won't do...
And what we'll probably do is, we'll probably have a lag. So if Corey and I do episode 12, or let's say in a few weeks, Corey and I will do episode 13, then the next week, Trish and I will do a digest of episode 12.
Right.
And what that gives us is that gives about 3 weeks of discussion. So that gives our analysts time to make their predictions, send their content. That gives listeners a chance to listen to the new episode, think about it, send us their feedback, and then us to gather all that up and prepare discussion about it. So it's basically a way to keep the discussion going, right?
Right, absolutely.
So that
give other people a voice in the discussion.
Yep, exactly.
Well.
And especially, you know, and maybe even incorporate new evidence. Because Corey and I, you know, a lot of times we will – we'll pick a topic, we'll discuss it a little bit, we'll get on the show, we'll discuss it more, develop our thoughts, make our predictions, and then like 2 weeks later some leak will come out and then it will, you know, be new evidence and Corey won't have a chance to have incorporated that into our predictions or discussed it. And so this will give Trish and I a chance to revisit these things and do some meta-analysis, look at what our analysts and our listeners have said, and Trish will make her prediction. So that'll be the major suspense for these digest episodes will be what is Trish's prediction.
What will Trish think?
Yeah.
That's right.
We won't announce those until the episode's been released. But we'll also go over all the predictions that we've gotten from our analysts and feedback from our listeners. And I don't get to change my prediction, but maybe I'll go and say, yeah, I was wrong. I'm screwed. I'm going to get this one wrong. So anyway, let's commence with the furiously catching up. So we're going to begin with episode 3, and episode 3, to remind our listeners and myself and Trish, since it's been like 3 or 4 months since we did this.
Right.
Episode 3 was about the Battle of Azza Nulbazar. This was we continued our foray into the deep history of the dwarves and the history of the enmity between the dwarves and the goblins. If folks recall, Corey and I are huge fans of the Battle of Azza Nulbazar. And it sounded like a lot of our analysts also were. And there's a lot, I think there's a consensus among the fandom online that like, we really, really hope that they put some of this on screen because it's too awesome not to be on screen. I think there's some sort of, some questions about how much time they could spend on it, how it will be done. And if folks recall, there's actually a little consternation about the possibility that they might conflate elements of the Battle of Azza Nulbazar with the Battle of Five Armies, which is what takes place at the end of The Hobbit. And Corey and I, we stumbled upon this possibility while discussing Thror's death and hinting at the Battle of Azza Nulbazar discussion. And it sort of was like I think we used the Aragorn quote from the book, which was given to Legolas in the films about a shadow and a threat growing in our sleep. You know, like, oh my God, oh God,
oh my God,
I think they're going to do it.
I've had a few of those moments about different aspects.
Exactly.
This is the first one, yes.
Yes, this was the first time when we felt that way too. We're like, oh God, they're going to do it, aren't they? So the question was, will they conflate the Battle of Azza Nulbazar, or at least elements of it, with the Battle of Five Armies? And the choices were A, no, not at all. They will be depicted completely separately. B, yes, partially. They'll retain the idea of the Battle of Azza Nulbazar, but maybe not show much of it on screen. And some elements will be incorporated into the Battle of Five Armies. For example, maybe Azog won't be dead. He won't have been killed at the Battle of Azan Ulbazar, and instead Dain will kill him at the Battle of Five Armies. So maybe he'll show up there. And then C is, yes, the Battle of Azan Ulbazar will be completely removed. Even there won't even be mention of it. And any whatever elements of it that appear on screen will do so in the Battle of Five Armies. If folks recall, Corey and I both landed on B. We were sure that they'll retain the idea of it and mention of it, but instead of using up screen time on the Battle of Azan Ulbazar battle, and then also having a battle at the end, the Battle of Five Armies, and having the battles be very similar, dwarves killing orcs and goblins, what they'll do instead is keep the idea of the Battle of Azan Ulbazar, and any really awesome stuff they want to show on screen, they will just incorporate those elements into the Battle of Five Armies. It's kind of a... Well, as long as, I don't know, I see practically how this would make sense, and you saw them do this a lot in The Lord of the Rings, where they moved quotes around, reassigned quotes and stuff to retain some of those ideas, but use them more, you know, in a more efficient, you know, from a film standpoint way. So I could see how they might end up doing this. I think I'd be unhappy. I would like to see the Battle of Azan Ulbazar on screen, but you know, talking about lots of other stuff since then, there's lots of other things I'd like to see on screen too, and I don't know how they're going to fit all of it. So what we're going to do is Trish and I are going to discuss this in the context of other comments we've gotten from analysts, and which we're going to introduce now, and then when we get to the end, we will hear a little more about Trish's her perspective and what she thinks will happen. So I would like to begin by reading the short essay that we got from Mark Fisher. If folks recall, Mark Fisher is the proprietor of the Encyclopedia of Arda, which I'm sure everybody uses. And the website for that is www.glyphweb.com/Arda, glyphs being spelled G-L-Y-P-H, Arda, you guys all know how to spell that. So here's what Mark said. I think we can be pretty confident that we're not going to enter a completely different line of events where, say, the Battle of Azan Ulbazar never happened, or Azog escaped at the end, or something radical of that sort. It'd be difficult to pull on threads like those without unraveling the entire backstory, and I doubt Peter Jackson would want to get involved in a wholesale revision of dwarfish history. I think it's a pretty safe bet that we'll see Thror's demise, and if so, it would make sense that we'd also see something of the aftermath, especially the resulting battle. That would also be a chance for the movie to give us a recognizable point of reference early in the story, since we've already seen Moria and Azan Ulbazar in the Fellowship of the Ring. We might even get a fleeting cameo from the Balrog when Dain looks into Khazad Dûm. Well, probably not, but something of that sort would help the audience to grasp where they are and what they're seeing. That's an interesting notion.
Yeah, it is an interesting notion.
On the other hand, I doubt we're going to get the complete and expurgated story of the battle. The films already have to fit in two major confrontations, the Battle of Five Armies, of course, and, I'd assume, the expulsion of the Necromancer from Dol Guldur. I can't really imagine that we'll see the three entire full-blown battle scenes across the two movies, and Azan Ulbazar is the obvious one to cut down, so I'm guessing we'll see it as a montage of key moments, or something like that, maybe with a voiceover from Bilbo to explain things. Taking all that into account, I'm torn between A and B. I wouldn't be surprised at all if some minor elements found their way into the Battle of Five Armies, but since I have to pick one option or the other, I'll settle on A. So, Trish, you've been listening. You've heard our running joke about Mark, right?
Yes. I was just going to say he's staying consistent to his reputation of sticking with
book. At least early on, he actually it's funny we've retained the joke despite the fact that it no longer reflects reality.
Right.
He was
right.
A the first five times and hasn't picked it since. But
and actually, if you hadn't brought it up, he may have stuck with A.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. We polluted him. And in fact, if you look at some of the other people, I think some of the other people have given just as many A answers as he has.
Actually, you know, I'm looking at the thing now, and you're right.
3, 4, 5. Arwen has just as many as he does. Father Roderick is pretty close. Father Roderick hasn't answered the last four questions, but so he might catch up. But poor Mark.
I guess it's just Mark doing it like in a series like that was so noticeable.
Yes. Yeah. It was just the first five questions where, like from the very beginning, I was off. Corey was a wishful thinker for the first two, and then he got off. So, yeah. The next thing that I would like to do is – actually, before that, you have any sort of thoughts or responses you'd like to give to what he said?
Well, you know, that thing about the Balrog was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And they would put a fleeting cameo of the Balrog. I don't know. You know, somehow they're going to have to, you know, make the connection that it's Moria and Azanobalzar.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I'm like fixated on that notion now. So we were talking earlier about the fact that we're starting to be concerned we have too many good questions to make predictions about, and we don't want to leave any good prediction questions unanswered when the film comes out. And I'm starting to so we've been talking about adding like B questions, so like just, you know, sprinkling in each episode we'll have a main topic, but we'll sprinkle in extra questions. We already did this on the most recent Riddles in the Dark, where we're talking about Gollum, and we added a B question that was, will he leave the Misty Mountains on screen? I'm really tempted to add one retroactively here. Will we see a Balrog on screen?
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what people think.
Actually, I love that idea.
Ask the folks who are going to – I don't know if we want to put it up on the grid or not, but ask the folks, you know, our listeners to comment on the site. Do you think a Balrog is going to make an appearance of some sort in this –
Yeah, if we get to see the Battle of Azanobalzar in any way, shape, or form, will we see a Balrog during it? I actually think if we see it on screen, the battle, I wouldn't be surprised. They think that's really tempting. I don't know if they'd be able to resist.
It is tempting. I don't know. Gosh, I've been thinking about, you know, how many connections is Jackson going to try to make to the trilogy movies, you know, and I could see this being one where he would want to sort of like, you know, show a Balrog because we're so familiar with it from Fellowship of the Ring. Oh, tough.
Without anticipating your answer much, do you have any thoughts just about this, his general point about the fact that he's right, there are really three potential large-scale battles that could be shown on screen?
Yeah. But also, you know, the thing he said about, you know, he doesn't think that Jackson's going to want to try to pull the thread too much, you know, in other words – I will say this, you know, I think in Keep the Suspense Alive, I just don't think C's an option, you know, of not having it in at all. I think because Mark makes the point of saying, you know, I don't think it could be completely removed without it impacting too much of the backstory.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree with – obviously I'm inclined to agree with that too, since I picked B. And I haven't changed my mind since then. okay.
However – now you're going to introduce a segment, right, from with Casual Stroll Mordor, right?
That's, we're going to give us a very different perspective on things.
Round.
All right, so we've got – this is an interesting choice because it really depends on how much they go into the backstory of the ring – or not so much the ring, but the Lonely Mountain, and how much are they going to carry it forward. I mean, do they go with, you know – they're exiled, and then Thrain goes to Moria. To me, okay, in the first movies, in The Lord of the Rings, they did do the first battle between Sauron.
Yeah, they went back and, well, when the ring was cut from Sauron's hand.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of important.
Yeah, it's very important. Does this really carry over? I mean, do we need to know about Dawn?
Yeah, I'm thinking of someone like my mom watching this movie.
Right.
Who does not know anything, who is part of Peter Jackson's audience. He has to make this understandable for people who don't read Tolkien. It has to be an enjoyable movie experience for everybody.
Right.
Going backwards doesn't seem to make sense. I think that it's going to be very clear that the dwarves and the goblins hate each other. We don't need to go back and find out why.
Yeah, and also, I mean, how much... Okay, so... it's depending on, you know, is Peter Jackson going to be like George Lucas, where he feels like he needs to make a photocopy of, you know, his prequel, be this, you know, be like the sequel? Does episode one need to be like episode four? Exactly. Except horrible with Gungans, and hopefully not. So I think if we see anything like this, it would be like a brief pan, but it doesn't even make sense. It's taken the story a little bit too far.
Yeah, I think it's too much backstory for the viewing audience.
We can see like Azog gets killed, but I mean, it's like
nobody would know who that means. That means
it's like, okay, Thrain goes and takes back Moria. Up to that point, you go a little bit too far. I mean, that has nothing to do with the Lonely Mountain. That has to do with Thrain being crazy and going into, you know, into the mountains. I mean, does it really? Do we really need to know
Thor
about that?
It was Thor who went into the mountains.
Sorry, Thor.
And got killed.
Do we need to really know about Thor going into the mountains getting killed? Do we?
And
do we know it need to know about the battles after
it's
that?
It's Thorin's backstory. Thorin is the main character here.
That's true.
But the book is called The Hobbit. It should be following Bilbo, not Thorin.
I'm going to say No, it's not going to be in there. They will be it's not even going to be in there at all. So I think
it says it will be completely removed and whatever elements appear on screen will do so in the Battle of the Five Armies.
Then C. I think C might
be the way to go here. They might.
Well, would they combine them?
Well, people wouldn't know the difference. Most folks would not know the difference.
True. Did they say, well.
Because they do have dwarves in the Battle of the Five Armies that are part of the Battle of Annas Nul Bazar, where they get names. The Tolkien professor said that's when the Iron Foot and Oaken Shield and all that kind of stuff comes into play. So maybe that's where they'll combine those and like that. I don't know.
Lily says that there is somebody who has been filmed as Azog or has been casted as Azog.
Azog. And they mention in the Tolkien professors on Riddles in the Dark podcast that perhaps it'll be Azog and not whoever the bad guy is for the Battle of Five Armies.
Bolg or...
Yeah, well, who's supposed to be like Azog's son or something.
I think it was Bolg.
Bolg, yes. Yeah. Bolg is correct, honey. Very good.
Yay.
It's a son of Azog. So it's possible that Bolg will be replaced by Azog in the battle. And
that is possible. They've done that. I mean,
and it'll make it more personal for the dwarves because the dwarves hate Azog.
Ooh, good. I like that. I'm going with C.
Okay.
They talked me into it.
That's our answer.
Yeah, I'll go with C. I mean, it makes... Peter Jackson does take liberties because it does make sense. So,
well, he's got a story to tell in like a short. And also, I mean, even if it is in the Battle of the Five Armies, that's not until next year because true. It's the second. It's got to be in the second. Battle of the Five Armies is the end of the book.
Yeah, it's the end of the book. Well, then, Tolkien does do the whole walking back part in The Hobbit, too. Just not as much as in Lord of the Rings. So. Yeah, I'll go with that. I like the twist that you got with Azog is in there and he killed Thor. I like it. I do.
And so all the dwarves are like, it's Azog!
Yeah, exactly.
Mark-a-zog!
You think if he's in there, Thorin takes him out?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Big ol' axe, like, ooh, slow motion.
Okay. I dig it. I totally got you. Yeah. Okay. We'll go with C. All right.
Okay.
Okay. So that's obviously a very different perspective from Mark Fisher. He, you know, the American Golden Star sort of are taking kind of. I think they're actually doing a slightly better job of representing the average view. You know, the movie going public's perspective on this because. The thing with elements like Battle of Azanobazar is that it's one thing when you're making a film like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or The Hobbit or anything like Game of Thrones to have to wrestle with have people read the book or not about which right. upon which this is based. It's a whole other thing to wonder have people delved into the appendices and the companion books and Tolkien's unpublished notes that his son gathered up. Even if people have read Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, it's probably far fewer of them have actually bothered to read through the entirety of Appendix A. And so they have a good point. It could be confusing. It may be better to just leave it out. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, that's true. I mean, you know, in thinking about what they said, it's like, am I too much of a Tolkien nerd, you know, that I think it's so important to the story?
Yeah,
you know?
And I think – you and I insist it's absolutely essential. How could you possibly leave it out?
But I know there in one of the episodes, I think you guys talked about this, and I can't remember if it was in this one, which is how do you then explain this horrible enmity between the dwarves and the goblins? Or, you know, I guess maybe with Thor being killed by them could be sufficient. I don't know. You know, that's true. I mean, how useful is it? I just still think, I don't know. I still think there has to be some, I still think it has to have existed.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I still think I agree. And this is a case where sort of the lines between the answers blur. I personally think it's unlikely that much of it will be shown on screen just because of screen time, but I'm sure that they will retain the idea of it. And it will be mentioned, referenced by both dwarves and goblins. I think where it could really come up is in the confrontation with the Goblin King. And they'll be talking about the atrocities that were committed against each side, and they'll be talking about, you know, you killed Thrine, but you killed or not Thrine, but you killed Dine's father, was it Nine? I think you killed Nine, Azog, and you know you killed my father, and you killed my father. I think a lot of that could be retained, but I don't know about.
Why did I just flash on the Princess Bride?
Exactly. Yeah. That element is because that I don't remember the. I haven't read Hobbit in a while, I confess, and I don't remember the exact exchange with the Goblin King, but. I know that he recognizes the swords and sees those as
swords. That's right. Yeah.
He sees those as swords that have been used to murder goblins. And I do think they talk a little bit about sort of, you know, I think Thorin introduces himself and they recognize his name,
right.
And as being somebody that was a great goblin slayer. So,
Well, this is actually a good segue into some of the comments from the site.
Great. Let's hear it.
I've got actually two. Sarah wrote, could the Battle of Azanul Bazar, I think is similar to what you were just saying, be portrayed like the first Battle of the Ring in which Isildur defeats Sauron? It would give sufficient backstory to build up the animosity between the dwarves and the goblins, as well as provide the oaken shield to Thorin's name. Could be done in a flashback when the dwarves are captured in the goblin caves. Now, I hadn't actually thought about that. You know, I was thinking about it like at the beginning of the movie, but when they're actually at the goblin caves, mm-hmm. She says Thorin has a flashback while being carried down into the mountain. It would keep this battle separate from the Battle of Five Armies while still maintain the epicness of both as they did in Lord of the Rings. So I think it's, you know, that's a possibility that it actually gets introduced, maybe not in the beginning of the story, but when they're actually in the mountains. I hadn't really thought of it that way. I'd been thinking it had to kind of be a setup, you know, in the beginning, like at the unexpected party, explaining why all of this is happening. But I don't know. And then Fairhund, I hope I got that right. I could definitely see it as a flashback or two, though I would want to see at least some of it before the caves. I'm not as pessimistic as Corey and Dave, though I can see Jackson having Azog escaping death until Five Armies as it has more dramatic weight since the dwarves win the battle but fail to kill the main target. It could be seen as too much of a win for the dwarves that early. I would have expected it as a prologue before the Frodo frame was revealed. It would be odd to have a prologue that is outside the frame story. I guess that's true. I can see Bilbo asking a dwarf how Thorin got the name Oaken Shield. There's another possibility at some point, and then get a narration with flashes of the event around the battle. This way Bilbo gets an idea of just how much the dwarves hate goblins. And that's actually a good point too. So there's several points probably in the story before they get to the mountains where this could be a flashback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I that's sort of how I anticipate working too. That's something that I was concerned too, like about the frame story, like how awkward would it be to start with a flashback or past history or something, sort of similar to the way it was done with Lord of the Rings, where you have maybe some weird random narrator like Galadriel narrating the events, or here maybe it would be Thorin or something. How weird would it be to do that and then introduce this frame story? I suppose maybe if you had Bilbo narrating it, it could be incorporated in the frame story. But I just think that it ends up being like Inception. You've got like a frame within a frame within frame, a frame. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I don't think Jackson would do it because it would be too similar to Fellowship of the Ring. I mean, I think that reason alone, he probably wouldn't.
Yeah, people might not be able to tell the difference between this battle and the War of the Five, the War of the Last Alliance. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's kind of said, I mean, he's, you know, one of his concerns about directing this, you know, why he wanted Del Toro, I guess, originally was because he was concerned about his having done the trilogy and, you know, would he be able to actually make this a different story and that kind of, so I think that was on his, it's been on his mind. So he wouldn't want to recall, I don't think, the opening to the trilogy either.
Yep.
But anyway, but that's still, I mean, that's kind of a side thing to the question. The question being, is it even going to be brought up? And if so, how?
Yep.
Which then I think Father Roderick then has a different angle too, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. So let's play his stuff next. To remind people, and actually I forgot to do this with American Golden Star too, American Golden Star are the hosts of the Casual Stroll to Mordor podcast, which is like the largest and most popular Lord of the Rings online podcast out there. I don't actually play the game. I have an account, but I don't play the game. Do you play, Trish?
No, I don't. I have an account, but I don't play.
It's pretty – it's, you know, it's by no means on the same scale as World of Warcraft or games like that, but it has a very strong following, and a lot of really diehard Tolkien fans are in there. And what you see in the Lord of the Rings Online a lot more than in other games is a real focus on the lore and on role playing. You know, like you have people actually, they don't just play the game and grind out levels and try to get to end game content, but they actually play their roles. So you have people who go in character when they play. So American Golden Star are probably they have a site, casualstrolltomordor.com. It's probably the best known Lord of the Rings Online site. It's now a part of the Middle Earth Network. So you can find out more about them. Their Twitter account is @StrollToMordor. They have a Facebook page. They have a YouTube channel, Stroll to Mordor. They have a Flickr account, Casual Stroll to Mordor, where they post screenshots. And then they have you can find them on iTunes. And they also broadcast their show live generally every Saturday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Middle Earth Network Radio, which is radio.mymiddleearth.com. So, Father Roderick von Hogan is the CEO of the StarQuest Production Network, which is the largest Catholic new media company in the world, I believe. Maybe even the only one, I'm not sure. He does a whole slew of podcasts, really wonderful things on a variety of topics. And you may be surprised to know from a priest and a Catholic site that he does shows on a lot of sort of popular culture type stuff, but he does. And one of them is The Secrets of the Hobbit, which I am a co-host of. And we just basically – it's a weekly podcast. It records live on Thursday now Wednesday mornings, usually at 10 p.m. or 10 a.m. Eastern time. If you want to listen live, you can go to live.sqpn.com. And we just sort of do a rundown of Hobbit news. We discuss various other kind of larger Tolkien-related news and community news. And we also do some speculation about the films, and we make Riddles in the Dark predictions, of course. So the website for that is thehobbit.sqpn.com. Our Twitter account is @HobbitPodcast. We have a Facebook page. And there's a sister podcast, which is dormant right now, The Secrets of Middle Earth. That is middleearth.sqpn.com, Twitter account @MiddleEarthCast, and there's a Facebook page. So I'm going to go ahead and play Father Roderick's contribution for this episode, which I think I might actually be involved in this conversation as well.
Now, of course, my prediction, will we see this battle or will we only see the battle of five armies? My prediction is going to be answer C. I think that the battle of five armies will be the culmination of at least one of the two movies, of course. And so they will focus on that. I think if they would add the battle of Azanulbazar, even though it is a very filmic battle and has great ingredients for, you know, a movie version, I think it would confuse people. It would be too much. It really is part the reason that it's important is more kind of a historical perspective, because for instance the name Thorin Oakenshield is linked to this battle. The whole Oakenshield thing is part of the story of the Battle of Azanulbazar. So, but does that really matter to the movie viewer? Isn't that just overkill to try to explain all these names and events by showing so much background, which really has not much impact on the actual quest of Bilbo and his company? So I think Battle of Five Armies, that is mentioned in The Hobbit. It's part of the original narrative of The Hobbit. So I think that will be the big battle. I think that the Battle of Azanulbazar will completely be removed, and whatever elements appear on screen will do so in the Battle of Five Armies. So I think they're just going to, you know, merge the Battle of Five Armies with some of the elements of the Battle of Azanulbazar, and that'll be it. So yes, unfortunately, even though I know that both Corey and Dave are super excited about this Battle of Azanulbazar making it to the silver screen, but I don't think it's going to happen. And that's my prediction, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, so Father Roderick obviously agrees with American Golden Star that you know, getting into the Battle of Azanulbazar and a lot of this backstory is just getting maybe a little too deep into the complicated history of Middle-earth that Tolkien devised, for maybe too much for your average moviegoer to digest. So he thinks that it'll simplify things to leave it out and just incorporate the cool elements into the later Battle of Five Armies. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Trish?
Am I supposed to give mine yet? Or
not just still? Yet.
Okay, not just yet. I think that's a valid viewpoint, you know? Yeah. I mean, but I still, maybe it's just wishful thinking. It's just wishful thinking. I mean, yes. I still just can't see that you could just leave it out entirely. I mean, I still agree with Mark that it would be too much of the backstory taken away.
Yep. Well, I think, obviously, like I said, I agree with that. So, so let's do a quick rundown of all the predictions thus far, and then we'll get yours.
Okay.
First, I want to introduce two new analysts who recently joined us. The first is Hannah Harlow from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. That's fantastic alliteration. I'm really impressed by that. Hannah is a manager of e-marketing at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, which is the famous publishing company that actually has the publishing rights in the U.S. to most of Tolkien's books, including the re-releases of The Hobbit coming out this year. And more important to us Tolkien professor fans, Houghton Mifflin is the company that will be publishing Corey's Hobbit-related book coming out this fall called Exploring the Hobbit. And Hannah has been working very closely with Corey. She's basically his liaison at the company and has done a fantastic job. And she has graciously agreed to participate in our game. So thank you very much, Hannah. And the other new analyst that I would like to introduce is The Last Alliance, which is the Tolkien Society at the University of Alberta. And their representative, Megan Engel, is relaying predictions for each of our questions that are actually voted on by their entire group when they have their regular meetings. So, and I think they're actually going to start contributing some audio content, which is great. So thank you very much, Last Alliance and Megan. You can find out more about them by visiting their website, which I believe is lastallianceuofa.com. And you can hear some podcasts that they've actually started recording there. So our rundown. We have 1A from Mark Fisher of the Encyclopedia of Arda. We have a total of 6Bs from Corey and myself, as well as from Arwin Kester of Middle Earth News, and from Hannah Harlow of Houghton Mifflin, from Lillian Alorial of the Warriors of the Westfold podcast, and from The Last Alliance. Finally, we have 3Cs that you've already heard, from Father Roderick of Secrets of the Hobbit, and from American Golden Star of A Casual Stroll to Mordor. Okay, so I think it's time now for you to reveal your prediction, Trish. So, what do you think? As you've heard, the most popular answer amongst our other analysts is B. I think, let's see, I would say there's about, I think 60% of the votes were for B. So, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to be a conformist this time and go with B myself.
Ah, all right.
I just, you know, I like Mark, I was torn between A and B. I mean, I think, you know, I think Corey, I can't remember if Corey said this or not too, but, you know, I'd love to be able to see the battle, but I just don't think they're going to do that. So I was wavering between A and B. Now, after listening to subsequent episodes as far as what else has to go into the movies and, you know, having seen what we've seen as far as what we know is going to be in, mm-hmm. I have to go B with B. I can't go with C. I just can't, as I think I've made clear, I just can't get behind C. So B it is.
All right, fair enough. And I agree, so I totally encourage you to do that.
We have no controversy, you and I, on this one, do we?
No, we're in complete agreement. So, awesome. So the original plan today was for Trish and I to roll episodes 3, 4, and 5 into one digest episode, but that seems... That seems ill-advised at this point, unless we want to set new Riddles in the Dark episode-length records. And I think it would be more efficient, particularly from an editing standpoint, to just go ahead and call Uncle, end it here. But fear not, we're just going to sign off, hit stop, then hit record again, and launch right into the next one. So you'll get episodes 4 and 5 very shortly in the next digest, and hopefully you won't have quite so much just totally non sequitur banter at the
beginning. You won't get all the backstory stuff.
You'll get a little bit of
it. Or the Mythgard stuff.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, fewer Mythgard ads. So,
that's right.
So anyway, I want to thank you, Trish, for agreeing to join the team and to help out. And I really enjoyed the conversation. I look forward to the next one.
Oh, me too. I'm just thrilled you guys took me up on my assertion, my offer. I don't even want to call it an offer. It's like, let me play.
Yes, we surrendered.
That's right. Well, good. Well, I look forward to the next ones.
Yep. And I especially want to thank all of our analysts who have sent us answers, as well as our listeners who sent feedback. Very quickly, I want to say, our analysts include Mark Fisher, the Encyclopedia of Arda, which is at glyphweb.com/Arda, Arwin Kesser of Middle Earth News, who you can find on Twitter at Middle Earth News and MiddleEarthNews.com, Father Roderick of SQPN and the Secrets of the Hobbit podcast, as well as American Golden Star of A Casual Stroll to Mordor, Hannah Harlow of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, Lillian Alorial of the Warriors of the Westfall podcast from Middle Earth Radio, and The Last Alliance, the Tolkien Society of the University of Alberta, and their representative, Megan Engel. So, thank you, everybody. And you know what, Trish? Do you want to take us away? I think you know what the appropriate thing to say here is.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe this is like a dream come true. Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.
We want to give a special thank you to John DiBartolo and the Lonely Mountain Band for allowing us to include their music in our podcasts. You can learn more about these songs, download samples, and buy their albums at minstrelsongs.com. If you are interested in getting involved in Riddles in the Dark or other Mythgard and Tolkien Professor productions, send an email to kale, K-A-L-E, at mythgard.org. So we forgot we had a special bonus Gollum question that we wanted to do, and that is straight up, is Gollum going to leave the cave during the course of the Hobbit film or not?
Right.
The reason this is a question is because in the book it takes him like several decades to leave the mountain.
Right. Right.
But we just don't think that the filmmakers will be able to resist having him included in later action in the film, maybe not directly interacting with the main characters, but at least showing up on screen. So do we think our prediction is this time around, will he leave by the end of this film? Not will he leave at some point during the course of the two films, but specifically, do we think he'll be out of the cave by the end of this first film? Will he maybe follow them out on their way out or something?
Right. Okay, well, of course there are difficulties here. Here are the difficulties: is that it is almost impossible to imagine that Gollum doesn't. I mean, he only doesn't come out in the books because of the sort of idiosyncrasies of how that story developed. I mean, you know, Gollum, of course, never emerges and remains safely in his cave in the original Hobbit because he wasn't this malevolent creature who was out for revenge. You know, he like waves goodbye to Bilbo on the way out, and there's no problem, and why should they ever meet him again? And so even when Tolkien goes back and rewrites Chapter 5 to make Gollum more wicked and to add in, you know, Baggins, we hates it forever, nevertheless, he still stays in there because he's only changing that one chapter. You know, he's not going to he didn't rewrite the entire book to like include like a vengeful Gollum hot on their heels. So, however, in the Fellowship of the Ring, when Gandalf is now going back and explaining, and we are being introduced to the further history of Gollum, then essentially, basically, as soon as Tolkien really sort of asks himself this question, does Gollum come out? His answer is, well, yeah, of course he does. Naturally, he would. There's no way that Gollum would not come out. But the problem is, had this actually worked the other way around in Tolkien's mind, that is, and here I'm doing like some serious guesswork, but like had the Gollum character as he was later developed in The Lord of the Rings, had he existed during the writing of The Hobbit, when The Hobbit was composed, not when it was revised, but when it was composed, it's like it's very, very difficult for me to imagine that Gollum would not have – that he would have just stood there and shaken his fist and yelled, Baggins, we hate it forever. He never would have been content with that. He'd have been on their heels that same night. He would have gone, he would have sneaked, he would have found a different way out of the mountains, and he'd have been on, he'd have been all over them, like a persistent case of lice. I mean, there's just no way that Gollum wouldn't have done that. So it's really actually kind of, like, what happens in the book is really kind of out of character for Gollum. It's hard for me to see any other way around that. That's one problem. Now the films are coming at Gollum, as I said in the episode, in the previous episode, the films are coming at Gollum from the Lord of the Rings perspective. So, you're basically getting this. We are composing the Hobbit story from the perspective of the Lord of the Rings Gollum, and so that problem it would be really sharp. The Gollum that we all have met, the Gollum that we all know and love from the Two Towers and the Return of the King. He's just going to sit there and be like, Baggins, we hate it forever. Well, I'm going back to my lake. No, he wouldn't do it. There's no way he could do it. But yet, what are they going to do? They're stuck. I mean, what other role is Gollum going to play? How are they going to keep him out of the rest of the story? Or how are they going to include him? Is he going to show up at the Battle of Five Armies? I mean, what on earth are they going to do if he does come out? And how are they possibly going to handle that? So, it's a serious problem and a big question, I think. But again, like, could they just make him stay docilely at home? I can't imagine it. He's got to come out. But how do they keep him from catching up with anybody for decades? You know, how do they keep him from being a character until, you know, like, until the Two Towers, essentially? That's really tricky, and I don't know how they're going to manage it. I don't know.
I was dead certain that we would see him leaving his cave by the end of the first film. Now I'm unsure. Now I think somebody in the questions proposed that they'll save it until it'll be a reveal at the end of the second film. You know, because I do think that the way that they will. Because I think at the end of the day, they're making this movie as a prequel to the other films, which means I don't think it's going to end the way The Hobbit book ends, which is happy-go-lucky. Yep, Bilbo's happy, you know, made it home from his adventure, and he, you know, lives happily for the rest of his life. I think they're going to play it as he arrives home, and then there's going to be it's going to end on some ominous notes. A last shot of the ring, maybe a shot of a Nazgul or two, and maybe a shot of Gollum. And so I could see that maybe the way that they'll deal with this is leave Gollum's role ambiguous throughout these films and don't show him until the end of the second film. That's a possibility. Because you're right. Okay. If they show him leaving his cave at the end of the first film and then don't involve him in any of the action, that's a problem.
Okay, wait. I just had a brilliant idea. Okay, are you prepared for this?
Yes.
How do you handle the intrusion of a character who's not supposed to be a story? By neutralizing him with another character who's not supposed to be in the story.
Nazgul. Are you stealing... Oh, a Nazgul?
Ah, because of course we have Gollum captured and tortured at the beginning of the Lord of the Rings. So we could have Gollum in pursuit and have him and have the Nazgul also be involved, as it seems they are going to be involved in some way. And we could have Gollum get nabbed by the Ringwraiths and being hauled off to Mordor to be tortured at the end of the movie.
Doesn't that introduce chronological problems? Like, why aren't they?
Oh yeah.
But those are problems that, you know, whatever. People have already paid to watch the movies.
Yep.
It's possible.
Not a problem. So are they going to torture Gollum for 60 years? Oh, yeah, sure, whatever. That's fine. I don't care.
Maybe Legolas will capture him.
Right, because he did such a fine job holding him captive in the Fellowship of the Ring. Possibly. I mean, he is. Now I'm blanking. In the film, Council of Elrond, does it come up about the escape?
I don't think so. Nope.
Is that mentioned? The escape of Gollum?
Nope.
I don't think it is. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's a shame. Because yeah, you could have that too. But no, but I mean, because he's got to be tortured in Mordor, and we do get that one brief shot of that happening in the Fellowship of the Ring, that is, of the torture of Gollum. Yeah. So, you know, so you don't like my brilliant idea? You think it opens up too many potential inconsistencies?
No, but I mean, it doesn't, the consistencies aren't any worse than anything else. I balk at the, as a book person who wants them to adhere to the chronology, I balk at the idea. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no, that doesn't make sense. How would they have not found the ring earlier than that? They must be the most incompetent. You know, actually, no. Maybe this dovetails nicely with what we know now about the efficacy of torture and extracting reliable information.
It took them 60 years to get Shire Baggins out of Gollum.
Gollum had them running all over Middle Earth looking for this ring.
Yeah, no, maybe. Yeah, exactly. They just didn't have the rack set to the right.
Maybe they will capture him and lose him.
He could escape. But see, because I'm thinking that would be one way to neutralize him, again, with other people who aren't there. I mean, it's hard to find any way to have him interact. The idea of having him succeed in his pursuit of Bilbo and the dwarves, that's the thing that seems to me so untenable. Maybe they'll do it, but it's any further interaction between Gollum and Bilbo and the dwarves would just introduce such a right-hand turn. I mean, such a right-angle turn
from the plot. Same thing with the Nazgul.
Yeah,
I mean, if they happen to catch up to the dwarves and Bilbo, major problem. The ring's right there, you idiots.
Right, exactly.
So maybe Gollum and the Nazgul will be busy with each other for most of the film.
Taking each other out of the rest of the plot. Yes, exactly. So that is the whole heart of my brilliant piece of deduction right there. I don't know. But I would think, and I think at, as far as my actual prediction for the first film, I do think he'll come out in the first film. Because I think there's going to have to be, even if it's a like teaser about something that's going to happen later, closure, I think there's going to have to be some closure to the, because again, I think that they've put themselves in a hard place. It's very difficult to imagine the Lord of the Rings films Gollum simply standing there at the end of a tunnel yelling Baggins, we hate it forever, and then doing nothing. So some indication of like further action or activity on his part are what I would expect to see. Let me see, where was it?
So you're saying were you a yes or no?
I'm yes. Okay. I'm yes. I was paging back up to see if I could find the thing that Yana said, because I agreed with it exactly. Yana says, I'm going on record here. I've said it as well during the last episode that I think we'll see him emerge out of the cave. In fact, I think it might be one of the final scenes. I think it might be one of the final scenes of the second movie. I think it might be one of the final scenes of the first movie. That we will see hints that Gollum is going to emerge. Because see, the thing is, it's like they have to do something. They can't just have him emerge. I mean, I guess they could, but if they're going to wait that long, I mean, it's that, even that's implausible. Like seriously, if he's going to emerge, and he's not going to wait decades, why would he wait weeks?
Yes,
you know, or months.
Yes,
he wouldn't.
That's why I'm thinking. I think you've actually won me over. I actually think most likely thing at this point is he'll come out at the end of the first film, get captured by the Nazgul, maybe escape at the end or something. But I personally think the only other really tenable thing to do with him is to not show him until the end of the second film, but don't have him just be emerging then. Have him show up in Lake Town at the end of the second film. So that way it's like, oh, Gollum's already left. It's ambiguous about when he left. You can fill in the blanks, and it just so happens that he was just one step behind, which is kind of I mean, in the books, he's 60 years one step behind, but he is, you know, right. one step behind.
It's a big step, but yeah. he's one step behind.
That's right.
Right. Right, right, exactly. No, no, that would be cool. That would be cool to see, you sort of pan away from a scene in, like, Dale or Lake Town or something, and there's Gollum behind a rock. So basically, to imply to the audience, he's been hanging around this whole time, but you haven't seen him on screen because he's so clever. And none of the other characters have noticed that he's there or have any idea that they're being watched because he's really good. But then again, you then have the consistency problem. Like, okay, so how is Bilbo going to go back to the Shire and live, you know, his happy middle-aged years? That's why I'm thinking he's going to get captured by the Nazgûl or something, because something's got to happen to him. Like, if he comes out, you've got to have a reason why there is no, you know, Bilbo and Gollum confrontation part two. I mean, there has to be a reason for that. You know, they would need a reason as to why he doesn't emerge, or they would need a reason as to why he does not ever interfere with the plot or meet Bilbo ever again. And that's why, like, you know, his capture, which has already been set up, is the only thing that I can think of that could fit the bill, that could, you know, reconcile those things. I don't know. But,
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I don't know
possible.
What they're gonna do. I don't think I actually predicted. I'm gonna go with yes. He's leaving at the end.
Yes,
of the
he
first
does emerge.
Film. I think the
first film,
capture
yeah.
story is the most compelling theory I've heard so far.
I thought it just came to me, this luminous, crazy idea.
Yeah.
Let's get all of the characters who don't belong there together and take them off stage.
Yeah.
At
let's
the same
let's also
time.
Send let's send Legolas and Tauriel after the Nazgûl.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And all of the Tolkien purists cheer as the non-canonical characters are all ushered off the stage on the same bus.
In fact, we could just cut all that material out of the movie and make it a web series.
Right. Very good. Very good. Exactly.
All right. I think we've worn that topic out. So I will add that to
that
the prediction
good.
Grid as well, and we will ask our analysts to make two predictions this time.
That's right, yes. The yes or no on does he emerge in movie one, in film one, and then of course the regular prediction. But yeah, well, I'm glad I remembered that. I was thinking last time we didn't talk about it. I was like, it's okay, we'll do that next week, and then almost completely forgot. Okay, well, now we have obviously set a record, so we should totally stop at this point.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, and thanks everybody who has not only joined us but stuck with us through lots of backstage talk and then spontaneous addendum to the episode. That's what we're going to see. You come and join us live, then you get to hear the secrets of Riddles in the Dark backstage.
That's right.
So there
especially
you go.
If my Audio Hijack Pro failed recording this, then you'll be the only people that will have heard this conversation. If you want to make sure you don't miss a single moment.